Right, let's go to Jim Allister, the TUV leader, and Stephen Farry from the Alliance Party. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Jim Allister, we'll start with you. I'm sure you're delighted after last night's result.
Yes, I am delighted that this disastrous deal was so resoundingly defeated. I think the Prime Minister now needs to waken up. People were trying to tell her for months that she was on the wrong track. She's now produced a deal which Parliament... couldn't imagine it rejecting it more comprehensively. So she needs to go back to the drawing board, and going back to the drawing board means getting rid of the most objectionable part of the deal which caused it, which largely caused its failure, namely the backstop. The backstop itself is built on a hoax. There never was a need for it because there never was going to be a hard border. Who's going to build it? I've been asking that question for months. No one has answered that question. No one's going to build a hard border. And yet we had this backstop created as if someone was. So the backstop is our problem primarily. It's not the only problem. Handling away 39 billion is also a problem, but that's primarily the problem. So she needs to return to Brussels. She needs to say, either get rid of the backstop or we leave. And we leave as Parliament has decreed on the 29th of March. Now you choose. Do you want to lose us on world trade terms, or do you want to wise up and get rid of this backstop and give us a deal that you wouldn't dare put upon anyone else because you wouldn't dare try to break up anyone else's nation.
Jim Allister, many that voted this down were Remainers. Are you concerned about Brexit and it happening in the end?
No. The law of the land is clear. We're leaving on the 29th of March. That was the sovereign decision of the people. And now it's up to Parliament to deliver that verdict, which they handed to the people back in June 16, and now they need to deliver it. The Prime Minister's deal was not delivering it. It was not delivering us leaving the EU. It was leaving us subject to the European Court of Justice, subject to European laws that we couldn't control or couldn't have an influence on, leaving Northern Ireland in particular legally and fully part of the EU's customs union, not the United Kingdom's customs union, and putting a border down the Irish Sea, breaking up the United Kingdom.
Okay, Stephen Farry.
That was on Brexit. Now we need Brexit.
Well, what this shows is that 30 months on from the initial referendum, the UK is still no clearer in answering the question. What is it that they actually want? They are as divided as ever in this respect. And the vote last night was a mixture of people who thought that Brexit was a bad idea, people looking for a second referendum, people looking for Norway-style softer Brexit, and people rejecting the deal and playing fast and loose with the future of the UK in terms of risking a no-deal situation. So the ball is very much in the UK's court here to answer the question, what exactly does the UK want to see from this? And the past 30 months has been characterised by contradictory red lines, delusions, people chasing unicorns and imaginary solutions. So people need to the UK Parliament needs to decide what direction do they want to take in terms of these negotiations. And let me say as well, in terms of the point that Jim made around the backstop, first of all, the backstop must be understood as being much more than simply about avoiding a border. But obviously the border issue is the key aspect of that. But it looks at things at rights, the future of North-South cooperation being protected. But there is a requirement for a border. Let's not be under any delusions around this. If we leave in terms of a no-deal situation, there is a requirement from the European Union in terms of protecting its single market and customs union, and also the UK in terms of WTO rules. And WTO rules will devastate the Northern Ireland economy and the UK economy.
Jim?
I don't accept that at all. A free trade deal is the best option, but it's not the only option. And if the European Union refuses to play ball in that and tries to put upon us that which isn't acceptable, as Parliament demonstrated, then leaving in world trade terms is the only other option. The EU then will very soon come to its senses. They'll very soon be at our door asking for the free trade deal that's on offer, because they need us as much, indeed more, than we need them.
Okay, Jim,
they sell
Jim,
us more than we sell them.
Let me ask you
so,
this, you Jim
know,
Allister.
Those are the fundamental economics.
In your statement, you said you were delighted that Mrs. May's treacherous deal got its just desserts. What exactly do you mean by treacherous?
Well, a deal which says to the people of the United Kingdom, we will break up the United Kingdom, We will treat part of it as a third country. We will create a border down the Irish Sea so that there's inhibitions on trade from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. We will put part of the United Kingdom under laws that are from a foreign potentate which the local people or the representatives cannot influence, cannot change, which will be put upon you, whatever they are, with no input from you. That, to me, is treacherous. And that's what I mean, because that's what this withdrawal agreement was doing. It was putting Northern Ireland in that intolerable position, and that was betraying not just Northern Ireland, but betraying the very concept of Brexit.
There you go, Stephen Farrier, an intolerable position.
Well, if people want to look to protect the integrity of the UK, the answers are as follows. First of all, don't do Brexit at all. Secondly, go for the softest possible Brexit in terms of the customs union and the single market. And then thirdly, go for the backstop. If we end up in a situation where there's a no deal, then all bets are off in terms of political stability, political cohesion, and our economy. And let me also make very clear, a no deal situation impacts the UK the most. It impacts all of Europe for sure. But let's bear in mind, while the UK may trade in terms of volume, the actual absolute amount of trade, more with the EU, European trade is a bigger percentage of the UK's trade than the trade with the UK is a percentage for the EU. So the proportional impact is what people need to bear in mind, not the absolute flows, and that's actually a very disingenuous way of putting the issue across. And secondly, if we go for a free trade agreement is not a customs union. There is a qualitative difference between the two concepts, and under that, a border has to be drawn somewhere, because we're not part of the same customs space, and that is where the difficulty lies in terms of trying to reconcile things. And the backstop has been the best way of providing an insurance approach until we get to that particular point. But the backstop is in the interest of Northern Ireland. It does not jeopardise the Constitution in any shape or form, because that is determined by the principle of consent.
Sorry, it does absolutely prejudice when you say that a part of the United Kingdom shall be treated as a third country. That's what this agreement says. Then how can you possibly say that doesn't prejudice the constitutional position?
Because we're
makes Northern Ireland a place, a part, where we are subject to different laws, the laws we don't make ourselves, laws our nation doesn't make, laws that the EU makes, and puts us in legally their customs union, not the UK customs union. And therefore, Northern Ireland could never benefit from any free trade deal that the United Kingdom made for its customs union, because we would only be subject to the trade agreements made by the EU for its customs union. Well, so it is radically altering and destroying our constitutional position, and that's why it's been rejected. And Stephen needs to get rid of the programme. The deal is dead. The deal has been rejected. He needs to move on instead of living in the past of the hope that this deal can be resuscitated.
It's gone. Well, let me take those in reverse order. First of all, yes, I mean, the vote last night was very clear. So the options that now faces are either a situation where people return to that and recognise that any version of Brexit that is negotiated has to be predicated on a withdrawal agreement, and that must by definition include the backstop. So anyone who's thinking about Norway Plus or a Canada-style deal, which is a future relationship issue, has to first of all have the withdrawal, the divorce settlement, addressed first of all. My preference is a people's vote, that we reconsider Brexit, and I think there's a growing level of support across the UK, including here in Northern Ireland, for that particular...
And is that democracy?
Well, giving the people the right to determine and consider the way forward, that is absolutely democracy. I mean, basically, the whole situation around...
Because you didn't like what they decided the last time.
Things have changed so much in the past 2 or 3 years, and it would be a tragedy if we went for particularly a no-deal situation where the people of the UK have actually changed their mind. That would be the situation a democratic force.
So do you believe, Stephen, that a further vote would be more democratic than the previous?
Both votes would be democratic. They are creatures of the particular time in which they are held. So the vote in 2016 was based upon the facts as we knew it in 2016. Any vote in 2019 would be based upon the current circumstances.
But going by what you're saying, people would be more informed, is what you're suggesting. Therefore, the inference is that people would be more democratic this time round than previous.
Well, it's not about more or less informed. They're informed in terms of the context that, that faces us at this particular point in time. They're informed by the fact that Parliament is hopelessly divided on the situation. They're informed by the analysis from the government that shows that all versions of Brexit will leave the UK economy in a worse situation. So that people will see the choices that are there in front of them. And if people want to change their mind, they do have that right. And why are we denying people that option to have their particular say? But then he also wanted to turn this point about the trade deals. Basically, there's virtually no country in the world that works purely on WTO rules. That is the floor of world trade. People build free trade agreements on top of those things. But we can't do free trade agreements with the rest of the world through the European Union. And with the weight of the European Union, we can get better terms for those deals. The UK going out and doing their own free trade policy is wishful thinking. The deals they will get will be tick box exercises that are through desperation of concluding a deal to show people how successful that this has been. But the UK will be negotiating from a position of weakness and will be trampled on in terms of those deals. And there's areas of our economy that are extremely vulnerable in terms of that decoupling from the European Union, including our agri-food and manufacturing. But this is simply not just an issue of the manufacturing and agri-food. This is also a matter for the service economy, which is 80% of our economy here in Northern Ireland. And what the WTO system addresses is the movement of goods. It doesn't address things like non-tariff barriers, and doesn't properly address the issue in terms of services. The International Agreement on Services, which is called GATS, is also extremely weak. And we will leave large aspects of our economy in an extremely vulnerable position. So the focus on goods is slightly doesn't reflect the full spectrum of our economic interests.
Okay, Jim Allister, I know you have to go.
Yes, but I do want to say this. I'm sorry that Stephen thinks so little of his own country that he would badmouth it in the manner in which he has. We are the fifth biggest economy in the world. We can stand on our own two feet. That's what the people decided. And one of the motivators in that was the audacious and outrageous situation that as part of the EU, even though we are the fifth biggest economy in the world, we are not allowed to make any trade deal in our own name for our own interest. Only the EU can do that for us. And part of the liberation of Brexit is to be able to do that. And as for this nonsense that, oh, we would be squeezed, we couldn't trade, indeed we couldn't even trade in WTO terms, who does Stephen think, on what terms does he think we trade with a great deal of the world on? Only 44% of the UK's trade is with the EU. Most of the rest of it, 58% of it, of the rest, is on WTO terms. The United States is our biggest single trading partner, 18% of all our trade. We don't have a free trade agreement with them. Why? Because the EU doesn't have one. We will have one under Brexit, and that will enhance our trade. So the opportunities are there.
Okay, let's let him respond, Jim.
Stephen feels it necessary to talk down the United Kingdom.
Let's get his response to that, Jim.
The EU has over 70 trade deals with the rest of the world. Whenever we talk about the EU versus the UK, let's bear in mind, at least until the end of March, the EU is also the UK. So whenever we talk about the EU imposing things, the EU negotiates on behalf of all the member states, including the UK, and the UK is still a major player within the EU in those particular terms. So that is the opportunity we have. Whenever we look to expanding trade, yes, we can do deals with the United States, but with whom we have trade facilitation arrangements, so it's not purely WTO rules as we currently sit. But whenever we look to doing that deal, the EU will be able to negotiate far, far stronger terms than the UK alone. Just look to the whole situation around Bombardier last year in terms of the way the US tried to bully the UK in that respect. And the weight of the EU allows us to stand up to aggressive tactics from the United States. The US will be insisting on agriculture being a very key part of any UK deal, and that will radically change the whole nature of the agricultural market and will cut across the interests and the way that our agriculture is organised in Northern Ireland.
Stephen Farry, thanks. Stay there if you can for me. Jim Allister has had to go, but he did tell us in advance that he could only stay until 4:15. We'll take your calls on this in a moment. First of all, though, Matt Carthy from Sinn Féin. Good morning to you, Matt.
Good morning.
The Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou McDonald, said the result reinforced the need for the Irish government to stand firm on the backstop, but obviously the backstop is not going to get through Westminster, as it is at the minute.
Well, what happened in Westminster last night was that a significant majority of British MPs voted against the expressed wishes of the people in the north of Ireland. The people in the north, as we know, voted in favour of remaining part of the EU. They voted against Brexit. They have consistently shown through their representative organisations, whether it be business, agriculture, community, trade union, community, that they want either to remain part of the European Union or, failing that, for specific and special arrangements to be put in place to protect their the economy, the Good Friday Agreement, and the societal changes and improvements that we've seen over the past two decades. And I'm sure lots of people will be looking and asking themselves as to how you have a situation whereby such a large proportion of British MPs, using in some instances the premise of the backstop that's been put in place to protect the people of the North, actually went and voted against their expressed wishes. So it is absolutely imperative now that the Irish government and the European Union remain firm in relation to the backstop. It is the least worst option. There is no such thing as a good Brexit deal when it comes to Ireland. Any Brexit is going to have negative implications for all of us. What we have seen through the negotiation of the deal between, or the agreement between, the EU and the British government is a mechanism by which some of the damage can be minimised. And unfortunately, we have a situation where British politicians, as always, have put in their own narrow political interests ahead of that of the people of Ireland.
Is that fair? Is that fair, Matt?
Yes.
In what context? Because people will make the argument that if the backstop went through as is, people from Northern Ireland would be represented in Brussels from the south. And not everyone here would be happy with that.
Well, there is a mechanism by which we could try and alleviate that, which is ensuring that the North would remain to have access and representation in the at the European Union level through the European Parliament. But the truth of the matter is that the people of the North...
Without having MEPs that are from here that are elected in Brussels.
What I'm saying is that one of the mechanisms that we should be collectively, as political voices that represent people in Ireland, North and South, is ensuring that the North continue to have representation in the European Parliament. That would require political agreement.
But I'm asking exactly what that would mean. So would that be the MEPs that we would have? How would you actually do that?
Yes, what I'm suggesting is that we should have a scenario whereby the people of the North continue to elect and send representatives to the European Parliament. But notwithstanding that, on the basis of the backstop that is currently in place, that has been agreed through the withdrawal agreement, that has huge support among anybody that has an inkling of interest for the economy, for society, for the protection of the Good Friday Agreement. And that has been shown through not only the original vote by the people of the North in overwhelming terms in support of remaining part of the European Union, but every analysis that has been carried out since, whether it's been opinion poll, whether it's been research, whether it's been any form of public utterances on behalf of representative organisations, the clear view is quite obvious to anybody who decides to take the time to look at it, that the people in the North want this backstop as the least worst option, and therefore it is imperative that the Irish government stand up and demand that that backstop remain in place, that they don't blink, because it's quite clear that the British government aren't in a position to do that.
Stay there if you can, Matt. Mark Devenport, our political editor, joins us now. Good morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Vinny.
Just on what Matt was saying there in terms of representation for Northern Ireland in Europe, is that something that's possible?
Well, it's something that Sinn Féin has been looking for in terms of looking to see if there could have been some sort of MEP representation for Northern Ireland. But so far, the European Parliament has knocked that back. I think that they've redistributed the seats in a way in which the representation will only be for the Irish Republic. And, you know, I suppose it's a matter for citizens in Northern Ireland if they want to go and try and use the offices of any of the MEPs from south of the border. But certainly there wouldn't be dedicated MEPs for Northern Ireland. So the withdrawal agreement has really been an agreement mainly about trade, and it's been rather lighter on some of these citizens' rights that people have talked about, whether it be representation in the European Parliament or other rights in relation to education and so on.
There you go, Matt. And this is what I think causes some concern among people that are not in favour of the backstop as it currently stands.
No, well, as I mentioned, the backstop is the least worst option. The best option is that the North remains part of the European Union as the citizens voted for him. The electorate voted in overwhelming terms and has been reinforced. So absolutely there are lots of areas from which the backstop doesn't provide the type of protections that we would want to see in place, particularly, as Marcus said, in relation to citizens' rights, which include the right to send representatives to the European Parliament. What I'm saying is that we need to put in place and the protections in relation to trade and the economy and ensuring that we don't see any hardening of the border, absolutely, but that we shouldn't lose sight of the battles that have yet to come, and that's in relation to citizens' rights, recognising that under the Good Friday Agreement, international law, in fact, that people in the North are entitled to Irish citizenship. That makes them de facto EU citizens, and they should have the same rights as
EU. As you are aware, it was a UK vote. So what are Sinn Féin going to do? What can they do to try and help prevent a no deal, to prevent Northern Ireland, the UK, crashing out of Europe?
Well, Sinn Féin are going to do what we've been doing since in advance of the referendum, actually. But we're going to ensure that, first of all, that the mechanisms are in place. Remember when Sinn Féin first uttered the language of special status, in other words, saying that there needed to be special arrangements put in place in order to protect the people in the North and to protect the Good Friday Agreement in all of its parts. Many people called us naive. That has essentially become the EU policy, in no small part because of the work of Sinn Féin MEPs and the Sinn Féin leadership in relation to our work in the Dáil, in relation to our work here in the European Parliament, where I am today. I've been listening to the debate in the European Parliament where speaker after speaker, with the exception of British Brexiteers, have put on the record that they will not sacrifice the Good Friday Agreement, they will not sacrifice the progress that we've seen in on our island for the past 20 years at the behest of some unknown...
Okay, Matt, you've suggested there what you've been listening to. What about actual action on the part of Sinn Féin? What are you doing?
Well, as I've explained to you, Sinn Féin have been the most active in relation to all of these things. We have put forward sensible and credible alternatives to the British government's policy. It's quite clear, and it was clear from advance of the referendum. In fact, to many of us, particularly from a Republican's perspective, it was always clear that any British government would never put the interests of the Irish government ahead of the interests as they saw it as of England. What we have been doing is using our positioning, both within the Dáil and within the European Parliament, to actually advocate a route by which the North could be protected.
What about within Westminster, Matt?
That has been agreed.
That confidence vote tonight, did any part of you wish you were there, that you could actually cast a vote and make a difference?
No, because as I say, the experience and history has told us that if we are ever depending on a British Parliament to protect the interests of Ireland, then we are going to be disappointed. The truth of the matter is that the confidence vote tonight, one way or another, won't make any difference to the overall position whereby the EU have put forward an agreement and that has been signed up with by the British government, and the British government have failed to get the support of the House of Commons for that. If the members of that British Parliament collectively, and this would require much more than the seven Sinn Féin MPs, don't realise that they are playing with a very dangerous game in relation to Ireland, and if they don't realise the significant and dangerous consequences that could arise from the policies that they're pursuing, well then quite clearly the alternative has to be that the people of the North get to decide once and for all what union they want to be part of. Do they want to be part of a United Kingdom that quite clearly isn't acting in their interest, isn't acting with their concerns at heart, or do they want to be part of the European Union, which, as I've said, they emphatically endorsed in the Brexit referendum of 2016.
Matt Carthy, thank you very much.